Dave, listen. Robert is just a little overenthusiastic sometimes. But you have to admit he has a point. If Lori keeps writing stuff like this, the Wave won't have a chance. Just tell her to cool it, Dave. She'll listen to you. I don't know, Brian. Look, we'll wait for her after school tonight. Then you can go talk to her, okay? David nodded reluctantly. I guess. Chapter 15. Christy Ross was in a hurry to get home after choir that afternoon. Ben had disappeared from school halfway through the day, and she had a feeling she knew why. When she got home, she found her husband hunched over a book on Nazi youth. "What happened to you today?" she asked. Without looking up from his book, Ben answered irritably. "I left early. I wasn't feeling well. But I need to be alone now, Chris. I have to be prepared for tomorrow."
"But honey, I need to talk to you," Christy implored.
"Can it wait?" Ben snapped. "I've got to finish this before class tomorrow."
"No,"
Christy insisted.
"That's what I have to talk to you about. This Wave thing. Have you any idea what's going on at school, Ben? I mean, let's not even dwell on the fact that half my class has been skipping just to go to yours. Do you realize that this Wave of yours is disrupting the entire school? At least 3 students stopped me in the hall today to ask what the hell you're up to. And they're complaining to the principal, too."
I know. And that's because they just don't understand what I'm trying to do," Ben answered.
"Are you serious, Ben?" his wife asked. "Did you know that the school counselors have begun questioning students in your class?" his wife asked. "Are you sure you know what you're doing? Because frankly, no one else in school thinks you do."
"Don't you think I know that?" Ben replied. "I know what they're saying about me. That I'm crazy with power. That I'm on an ego trip."
"Have you thought that they might be right?" Christy asked. "I mean, think of your original goals. Are they still the same ones you have now?"
Ben ran his fingers through his hair. He already had enough problems with the Wave.
"Christy, I thought you were on my side."
But inside, he knew that she was right.
"I am on your side, Ben," his wife answered. "But I've seen you these last few days, and it's like I don't even know you. You've become so involved in playing this role at school that you're starting to slip into it at home. I've seen you go overboard like this before, Ben. Now you've got to turn it off, honey."
"I know. It must look to you like I've gone too far. But I can't stop now." He shook his head wearily. "Not yet."
"Then when?" Christy asked angrily. "After you or some of those kids do something you'll all regret?"
"Do you think I'm not aware of that?" Ben asked.
"Do you think it doesn't worry me? But I've created this experiment, and they went along. If I stop now, they'll all be left hanging. They'd be confused, and they wouldn't have learned anything."
"Well, let them be confused," Christy said. Ben suddenly jumped to his feet in frustrated anger.
"No, I won't do that. I can't do that," he shouted at his wife. "I'm their teacher. I was responsible for getting them into this. I admit that maybe I did let this go too long. But they've come too far to just drop it now. I have to push them until they get the point. I might be teaching these kids the most important lesson of their lives."
Christy was not impressed.
"Well, I just hope Principal Owens agrees with you, Ben," she told him. "Because he caught me as I was leaving today and said he'd been looking for you all day. He wants to see you first thing tomorrow morning."
The Grapevine staff stayed late after school that day to celebrate their victory. The issue on the Wave had been so successful that it was almost impossible to find an extra copy anywhere. Not only that, but teachers and administrators and even some students had been stopping them all day and thanking them for revealing the other side of the Wave. Already they had heard stories that some students were resigning from the Wave. The staff had realized that a single issue of the paper was not enough to stop a movement that had gained as much momentum as the Wave had that past week. But at least they had struck it a serious blow. Carl said he doubted there would be any more incidents of threats against non-Wave members, or any more beatings. As usual, Lori was the last one to leave the publications office. one thing about the Grapevine staff. They were great partiers, but when it came time to clean up, somehow they all disappeared. It had come as a shock to Lori earlier that year when she realized what having the top position on the paper, editor-in-chief, really meant. Having to do every little stupid job no one else wanted to do. And tonight, that meant cleaning up after the rest of the staff went home. By the time she finished, Lori realized that it had already grown dark out, and she was practically alone in the school building. As she closed the door of the Grapevine office and turned off the light, that nervousness she'd felt all week began to return again. The wave was undoubtedly smarting from the wounds the Grapevine had inflicted, but it was still strong in Gordon High. And Lori was aware that, as the head of the paper, she... No, she told herself. You're just being silly and paranoid. The wave was nothing serious. Just a classroom experiment that had gotten slightly out of hand. There was nothing to be afraid of. The corridors were darkened now as Lori headed to her locker to drop off a book she would not need that evening. The silence of the empty school was eerie. For the first time, she heard sounds she'd never heard before. The hums and buzzes of electrical current running to and from alarms and smoke detectors. A bubbling, splashing sound coming from the science room, where some overnight experiment must have been left brewing. Even the unusually loud, hollow echo of her own shoes as they rapped the hard corridor floors. A few feet from her locker, Lori froze. There on her locker door, the word enemy was painted in red letters. Suddenly, the loudest noise in the corridor was the quick, insistent beating of her own heart. Calm down, she told herself. Someone is just trying to scare you. She tried to get control of herself and started to do the combination of her lock. But she stopped in mid-turn. Had she heard something? Footsteps? Lori backed slowly away from her locker, gradually losing her battle to suppress her own growing fright. She turned and started walking down the hallway toward the exit. The sound of footsteps seemed to be growing louder, and Lori quickened her pace. The footsteps grew even louder, and all at once the lights at the far end of the hall went out. Terrified, Lori turned and peered back down into the dark hallway. Was that someone? Was there someone down there? The next thing Lori knew, she was running down the hallway toward the exit doors at the end. It seemed to take forever to get there. And when she finally reached the double metal doors and banged her hip against the opening bar, they were locked. In a panic, Lori threw herself against the next set of doors. Miraculously, they opened, and she flew out into the cool evening air, running and running. It seemed as if she ran for a long time, and finally she lost her breath and had to slow down, clutching her books to her breast and breathing hard. She felt safer now. David sat waiting in the passenger seat of Brian's van. They were parked near the all-night tennis courts, because David knew that when Lori came home from school after dark, she always took this route, where the bright lights from the courts made her feel safe. For almost an hour now, they had been sitting in the van. Brian was in the driver's seat, keeping his eye on the side-view mirror watching for Lori, and whistling some song so out of tune that David had no idea what it was. David watched the tennis players and listened to the monotonous plunk-a-plunk of tennis balls being hit back and forth. Brian, can I ask you a question? David said after a long while.
What?
What are you whistling? Brian seemed surprised.
Take me out to the ball game, he said.
Then he whistled a few more bars. Coming from his lips, the song seemed completely unrecognizable.
There, now can you tell?
David nodded. Sure, Brian, sure. He went back to watching the tennis players. A moment later, Brian sat up in his seat.
Hey, here she comes.
David turned and looked down the block. Lori was coming down the sidewalk, walking quickly. He reached for the door handle.
Okay, now just let me take care of this alone, he said, pulling the handle.
Just as long as she understands, Brian said. We're not playing around anymore.
Sure, Brian, David said and got out of the van.
Now Brian was starting to sound like Robert, too. He had to jog to catch up with her, all the while uncertain of how he should handle this. All he knew was that it was better that he do it than Brian. He reached her, but Lori did not stop, and he had to walk quickly to keep up with her.
Hey, Lori, can't you wait up? He asked. I've got to talk to you. It's real important.
Lori slowed down and glanced behind him.
It's okay. Nobody else is coming, David said.
Lori stopped. David noticed she was breathing hard and clutching her books tightly.
Well, David, she said, I'm not used to seeing you alone. Where are your troops?
David knew he had to ignore her antagonistic remarks and try to reason with her.
Look, Lori, will you just listen to me for a minute, please?
But Lori didn't seem interested.
David, we said everything we had to say to each other the other day. I don't want to rehash it now, so just leave me alone.
Against his will, David felt himself getting mad. She wouldn't even listen.
Lori, you've got to stop writing stuff against the wave. You're causing all kinds of problems.
The wave is causing the problems, David.
It is not, David insisted. Look, Lori, we want you with us, not against us.
Lori shook her head.
Well, count me out. I told you I quit. This is not a game anymore. People have been hurt.
She started to walk away, but David followed her.
That was an accident, he insisted. Some guys just use the wave as an excuse for beating that kid up. Don't you see? The wave is still for the good of the whole. Why can't you see that, Lori? It could be a whole new system. We could make it work.
Not with me, you can't.
David knew if he didn't stop her, she'd get away. It just wasn't fair that one person could ruin it for everyone else. He had to convince her. He had to. The next thing he knew, he had grabbed her arm.
Let go of me!
Lori struggled to get free, but David held her arm tightly.
Lori, you've got to stop, he said.
It just wasn't fair.
David, let go of my arm!
Lori, stop writing those articles! Keep your mouth shut about the wave! You're ruining it for everyone else!
But Lori kept resisting.
I will write, and I will say anything that I want to, and you can't stop me, she yelled at him.
Overcome with anger, David grabbed her other arm.
Why did she have to be so stubborn? Why couldn't she see how good the wave could be?
We can stop you, and we will, he shouted at her.
But Lori only struggled harder to get out of his grasp.
I hate you, she cried. I hate the wave. I hate all of you.
The words struck David like a hard slap in the face. Almost out of control, he screamed,
Shut up!
And threw her down on the grass. Her books went flying as she fell roughly to the ground. David instantly recoiled in shock at what he had done. Lori lay still on the ground, and he was filled with fear as he dropped to his knees and put his arms around her.
Jeez, Lori, are you all right?
Lori nodded, but seemed unable to talk as sobs filled her throat. David held her tightly.
God, I'm sorry, he whispered.
He could feel her tremble, and he wondered how on earth he could have done something so stupid. What could have made him want to hurt the girl, the one he really still loved? Lori pushed herself up slightly and sat sobbing and gasping for breath. David could not believe it. He felt almost as if he were coming out of a trance. What had possessed him these last days that could cause him to do something so stupid? There he'd been, denying that the wave could hurt anyone, and at the same time he'd hurt Lori, his own girlfriend, in the name of the wave. It was crazy. But David knew that he'd been wrong. Anything that could make him do what he'd just done was wrong. It had to be. Meanwhile, moving slowly down the street, Brian's van passed them, then disappeared into the darkness. Later that night, Christy Ross went into the study where her husband was working. "Ben," she said firmly, "I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I've been thinking, and I have something important to say." Ben leaned back in his chair and looked at his wife uneasily. "Ben, you've got to end the wave tomorrow," Christy told him. "I know how much this means to you and how important you think it is for your students, but I'm telling you it must end." "How can you say that?" Ben asked. "Because, Ben, if you don't end it, I am convinced Principal Owens will," she told him. "And if he has to end it, I promise you your experiment will be a failure. I've been thinking all evening about what you've been trying to accomplish, Ben, and I think I'm beginning to understand. But did you ever consider, back when you began this experiment, what might happen if it didn't work? Did it ever occur to you that you're risking your reputation as a teacher? If this goes wrong, do you think parents are going to let their kids into your classroom again?" "Don't you think you're exaggerating?" Ben asked. "No," Christy replied. "Did it ever occur to you that you've not only put yourself into jeopardy, but me as well? Some people think that just because I'm your wife, that somehow I'm involved in this wave idiocy too. Does that seem fair, Ben? It breaks my heart that after 2 years at Gordon High, you're in danger of ruining your job. You're going to end it tomorrow, Ben. You're going to go into Principal Owens and tell him that it's over." "Christy, how can you tell me what to do?" Ben asked. "How can I possibly end it in one day and still do the students justice?" "You have to think of something, Ben," Christy insisted. "You just have to." Ben rubbed his forehead and thought about the next morning's meeting with Principal Owens. Owens was a good man, and open to new ideas and experiments, but now he had immense pressures on him. On one side, parents and teachers were in arms over the wave, and pressure was growing on the principal to step in and put a halt to it. On the other side, there was only Ben Ross, pleading with him not to interfere, trying to explain that to stop the wave abruptly could be a disaster for the students. So much effort had gone into it. To end the wave without explanation would be like reading the first half of a novel and not finishing it. But Christy was right. Ben knew the wave had to end. The important thing wasn't when it ended, but how. The students had to end it themselves, and they had to understand why. Otherwise the lesson, the pain, all that had gone into it, was for nothing. "Christy," Ben said, "I know it should end, but I just don't see how." His wife sighed wearily. "Are you saying that you're going to go into Principal Owens's office tomorrow morning and tell him that? That you know it should end, but you don't know how? Ben, you're supposed to be the wave's leader. You're the one they're supposed to follow blindly." Ben did not appreciate the sarcasm in his wife's voice. But again, he knew she was right. The students in the wave had made him more of a leader than he had ever wished to be. But it was also true that he had not resisted. In fact, he had to admit that before the experiment had gone bad, he had enjoyed those fleeting moments of power. A crowded room full of students obeying his commands. The wave symbol he'd created posted all over the school, even a bodyguard. He had read that power could be seductive, and now he had experienced it. Ben ran his hand through his hair. The members of the wave were not the only ones who had to learn the lesson power taught. Their teacher did as well. "Ben," Christy said. "Yes, I know, I'm thinking," he replied. Wondering was more like it. Suppose there was something he could do tomorrow. Suppose he did something abrupt and final. Would they follow him? At once, Ben understood what he had to do. "Okay, Christy, I've got an idea." His wife looked at him uncertainly. "Something you're sure will work?" Ben shook his head.
No, but I hope it will, he said. Christy nodded and looked at her watch. It was late and she was tired. She leaned over her husband and kissed him on the forehead. The skin was damp with perspiration. You coming to bed? Soon, he said. After Christy went into the bedroom, Ben went over his plan again in his mind. It seemed sound, and he stood up, determined to get some sleep. He was just shutting off the lights when the doorbell rang. Rubbing his eyes with weariness, Ross trudged to the front door. Who is it?
It's David Collins and Laurie Saunders, Mr. Ross.
Surprised, Ben pulled the door open. What are you doing here? He asked. It's late.
Mr. Ross, we've got to talk to you, David said. It's real important.
Well, come in and sit down, Ben said. As David and Laurie entered the living room, Ben could see that both of them were shaken up. Had something even worse happened because of the wave? God forbid. The two students sat down on the couch. David leaned forward.
Mr. Ross, you've got to help us, he said, his voice filled with agitation.
What is it? Ben asked. What's wrong?
It's the wave, David said.
Mr. Ross, said Laurie, we know how important this is to you, but it's just gone too far.
Before Ross could even respond, David added, It's taken over, Mr. Ross. You can't say anything against it. People are afraid to.
The kids at school are scared, Laurie told him. They're really scared. Not only to say anything against the wave, but of what might happen to them if they don't go along with it.
Ben nodded. In a way, what these students were telling him relieved him of part of his concern about the wave. If he did as Christy told him and thought back to the original goals of the experiment, then the fears Laurie and David spoke of confirmed that the wave was a success. After all, the wave had originally been conceived as a way to show these kids what life in Nazi Germany might have been like. Apparently, in terms of fear and forced compliance, it had been an overwhelming success. Too much of a success.
You can't even have a conversation without wondering who's listening, Laurie told him.
Ben could only nod again. He recalled those students in his own history classes who had condemned the Jews for not taking the Nazi threat seriously, for not fleeing their homes and ghettos when rumors of the concentration camps and gas chambers first filtered back to them. Of course, Ross thought. How could any rational person believe such a thing? And who could have believed that a nice bunch of high school students like those at Gordon High could have become a fascist group called the Wave? Was it a weakness of man that made him want to ignore the darker side of his fellow human beings? David yanked him from his thoughts.
Tonight, I almost hurt Laurie because of the wave, he said. I don't know what came over me, but I do know that it's the same thing that's come over almost everyone who's in the wave.
You've got to stop it, Laurie urged him.
I know, Ben said. I will. What are you going to do, Mr. Ross? David asked.
Ben knew he could not reveal his plan to Laurie and David. It was essential that the members of the wave decide the matter for themselves. And for the experiment to be a true success, Ben could only present them with the evidence. If David or Laurie went to school the next day and told the students that Mr. Ross planned to end the wave, the students would be biased. They might end it without really understanding why it had to end. Or worse, they might try and fight him, keeping the wave alive despite its obvious destiny.
David, Laurie, he said, you have discovered for yourselves what the other members of the wave have not yet learned. I promise you that tomorrow I will try to help them toward that discovery. But I have to do it my way, and I can only ask that you trust me. Can you do that?
David and Laurie nodded uncertainly as Ben rose and showed them to the door.
Come on, it's too late for you kids to be out, he told them.
As they went through the door, however, Ben had another thought.
Listen, do either of you know two students who have never been involved in the wave?
Two students who WAVE members don't know and wouldn't miss?
David considered for a moment. Amazing as it might be, almost everyone he knew in school had become a member of the WAVE. But Lori thought of two people.
Alex Cooper and Carl Block, she said. They're on the Grapevine staff.
Okay, Ben told them.
Now, I want both of you to go back to class tomorrow and act as if everything is fine. Pretend we haven't talked, and don't tell anyone that you were here tonight or that you spoke to me. Can you do that?
David nodded. But Lori looked concerned.
I don't know, Mr. Ross.
But Ben cut her short.
Lori, it is extremely important that we do it this way. You must trust me. Okay?
Reluctantly, Lori agreed. Ben bade them goodbye, and she and David stepped into the dark.
Chapter 16. The next morning in Principal Owens's office, Ben had to pull his handkerchief out of his pocket and pat the perspiration off his forehead. Across the desk, Principal Owens had just slammed his fist down.
Damn it, Ben. I don't care about your experiment. I've got teachers complaining. I've got parents calling me every 5 minutes wanting to know what the hell's going on here. What the hell are we doing with their kids? You think I can tell them it's an experiment? My God, man. You know that boy who was roughed up last week? His rabbi was here yesterday. The man spent 2 years in Auschwitz. Do you think he gives a damn about your experiment?
Ben sat up in his chair. Principal Owens, I understand the pressure you're under. I know that the WAVE went too far. Ben took a deep breath. I realize now that I made a mistake. A history class is not a science lab. You can't experiment with human beings, especially high school students who aren't aware that they're part of an experiment. But for a moment, let's forget that it was a mistake, that it went too far. Let's look at it right now. Right now, there are 200 students here who think the WAVE is great. I can still teach them a lesson. All I need is the rest of the day, and I can teach them a lesson they will never forget.
Principal Owens looked at him skeptically. And what do you expect me to tell their parents and the other teachers in the meantime? Ben patted his forehead with his handkerchief again. He knew he was taking a gamble, but what choice did he have? He had gotten them into this, and he had to get them out.
Tell them that I promise it will all be over by tonight.
Principal Owens arched an eyebrow.
And exactly how do you intend to do that?
It didn't take Ben long to outline his plan. Across the desk, Principal Owens tapped out his pipe and considered it. A long and uncomfortable silence followed. Finally, he said,
Ben, I'm going to be absolutely straight with you. This WAVE thing has made Gordon High look very bad, and I'm very unhappy about it. I'll let you have today. But I have to warn you. If it doesn't work, I'm going to have to ask you for your resignation.
Ben nodded. I understand, he said. Principal Owens stood and offered his hand.
I hope you can make this work, Ben, he said solemnly. You're a fine teacher, and we'd hate to lose you.
Outside in the hall, Ben had no time to dwell on Principal Owens's words. He had to find Alex Cooper and Carl Block, and he had to work fast. In history class that day, Ben waited until the students had come to attention. Then he said,
I have a special announcement about the WAVE. At 5 o'clock today, there will be a rally in the auditorium, for WAVE members only.
David smiled to himself and winked at Lori.
The reason for the rally is the following, Mr. Ross continued. The WAVE is not just a classroom experiment. It's much, much more than that. Unbeknownst to you, starting last week, all across the country, teachers like myself have been recruiting and training a youth brigade to show the rest of the nation how to achieve a better society. As you know, this country has just gone through a decade in which steady double-digit inflation has severely weakened the economy, Mr. Ross continued.
Unemployment has run chronically high, and the crime rate has been worse than any time in memory. Never before has the morale of the United States been so low. Unless this trend is stopped, a growing number of people, including the founders of the wave, believe that our country is doomed.
David was no longer smiling. This was not what he had expected to hear. Mr. Ross didn't seem to be ending the wave at all. If anything, he seemed to be going more deeply into it than ever.
We must prove that through discipline, community, and action, we can turn this country around, Ross told the class. Look what we have accomplished in this school alone in just a few days. If we can change things here, we can change things everywhere.
Lori gave David a frightened look. Mr. Ross went on.
In factories, hospitals, universities, in all institutions.
David jumped out of his chair in protest.
Mr. Ross, Mr. Ross.
Sit down, David, Mr. Ross ordered.
But Mr. Ross, you said...
Ben cut him off urgently.
I said sit down, David. Don't interrupt me.
David returned to his seat, unable to believe his ears as Mr. Ross continued.
Now listen carefully. During the rally, the founder and national leader of the wave will appear on cable television to announce the formation of a national wave youth movement.
All around them, students started cheering. It was too much for Lori and David. Both rose to their feet, this time to face the class.
Wait, wait, David pleaded with them. Don't listen to him. Don't listen. He's lying.
Can't you see what he's doing? Lori said emotionally. Can't any of you think for yourselves anymore?
But the room only grew quiet as the class glared at them. Ross knew he had to act quickly, before Lori and David revealed too much. He realized he had made an error. He had asked Lori and David to trust him, and he had not expected them to disobey. But instantly it made sense to him that they would. He snapped his fingers.
Robert, I want you to take over the class until I return from escorting David and Lori to the principal's office.
Mr. Ross, yes.
Mr. Ross quickly walked to the classroom door and held it open for Lori and David. Outside in the hall, David and Lori walked slowly toward the principal's office, followed by Mr. Ross. In the background, they could hear steady, loud chants emanating from Mr. Ross's room. Strength through discipline. Strength through community. Strength through action.
Mr. Ross, you lied to us last night, David said bitterly.
No, I didn't, David. But I told you you would have to trust me, Mr. Ross replied.
Why should we? Lori asked. You were the one who started the wave in the first place.
The point was a good one. Ben could think of no reason why they should trust him. He only knew that they should. He hoped that by evening they would understand. David and Lori spent most of the afternoon waiting outside Principal Owens' office to see him. They were miserable and depressed, certain that Mr. Ross had tricked them into cooperating with him so that they could not prevent what now appeared to be the final hours before the wave movement at Gordon High joined the National Wave Movement, which had been growing simultaneously at high schools all over the country. Even Principal Owens seemed unsympathetic when he finally got around to seeing them. On his desk was a brief report from Mr. Ross, and although neither of them could see what it said, it was obvious that it must have stated that Lori and David had disrupted the class. Both of them pleaded with the principal to stop the wave and the 5 o'clock rally, but Principal Owens only insisted that everything would be all right.
Finally, he told them to go back to their classes.
David and Lori were incredulous.
Here they were trying to prevent the worst thing they'd ever seen happen in school, and Principal Owens seemed to be oblivious.
Out in the hall, David threw his books into his locker and slammed the door shut.
Forget it, he told Lori angrily.
I'm not hanging around here anymore today. I'm splitting.
Just wait for me to put my books away, Lori told him. I'll join you.
A few minutes later, as they walked down the sidewalk away from school, Lori sensed that David was getting depressed.
I can't believe how dumb I was, Lori, he kept saying. I can't believe I really fell for it.
Lori squeezed his hand.
You weren't dumb, David. You were idealistic. I mean, there were good things about the wave. It couldn't be all bad, or no one would have joined in the first place. It's just that they don't see what's bad about it. They think it makes everyone equal, but they don't understand that it robs you of your right to be independent.
Lori, is it possible that we're wrong about the wave? David asked.
No, David, we're right, Lori answered.
Then why doesn't anybody else see it? He asked.
I don't know. It's like they're all in a trance. They just won't listen anymore.
David nodded hopelessly. It was still early, and they decided to walk to a park nearby. Neither wanted to go home yet. David wasn't sure what to think of the wave or Mr. Ross. Lori still believed it was a fad that the kids would ultimately get bored with, no matter who organized it or where. What frightened her was what the kids in the wave might do before they grew tired of it.
I feel alone all of a sudden, David said as they walked through the trees in the park. It's like all my friends are part of a crazy movement, and I'm an outcast just because I refuse to be exactly like them.
Lori knew exactly how he felt, because she felt it too. She moved close to him and he put his arm around her. Lori felt closer to David than ever. Wasn't it odd how going through something bad like this could bring them closer? She thought back to the night before, how David had forgotten entirely about the wave the second he'd realized he'd hurt her. Suddenly, she hugged him hard.
What?
David was surprised.
Oh, nothing, she said.
David looked away. Lori felt her mind drifting back to the wave. She tried to imagine the school auditorium that afternoon, filled with wave members, and some leader somewhere speaking to them over the television. What would he tell them? To burn books? To force all non-wave members to wear armbands? It seemed so utterly crazy that anything like this could happen. So, suddenly, Lori remembered something.
David, she said, do you remember the day this all started?
The day Mr. Ross taught us the first motto? David asked.
No, David, the day before that. The day we saw that movie about the Nazi concentration camps. The day I was so upset. Remember? No one could understand how all the other Germans could have ignored what the Nazis were doing and pretended they didn't know.
Yeah, David said.
Lori looked up at him.
David, do you remember what you said to me at lunch that afternoon?
David tried to recall for a moment, but then shook his head.
You told me it could never happen again.
David looked at her for a second. He felt himself smiling ironically.
You know something? He said. Even with the meeting with that national leader at the rally this afternoon, even though I was part of it, I still can't believe it's happening. It's so insane.
I was just thinking the same thing, Lori said.
Then an idea struck her.
David, let's go back to school.
Why?
I want to see him, she said. I want to see this leader. I swear I won't believe this is really happening until I see it for myself.
But Mr. Ross said it was for wave members only.
What do you care? Lori asked him.
David shrugged.
I don't know, Lori. I don't know if I want to go back. I feel like the wave got me once, and if I go back, it might get me again.
No way, Lori laughed.
Chapter 17. It was incredible, Ben Ross thought as he walked toward the auditorium. Ahead of him, two of his students sat at a small table in front of the auditorium doors, checking membership cards. Wave members were streaming into the auditorium, many carrying wave banners and signs. Ross couldn't help thinking that before the advent of the wave, it would have taken a week to organize so many students. Today it had taken only a few hours. He sighed. So much for the positive side of discipline, community, and action. He wondered, if he was successful in deprogramming the students from the wave, how long it would be before he'd begin seeing sloppy homework again. He smiled. Is this the price we pay for freedom? As Ben watched, Robert, wearing a jacket and tie, came out of the auditorium and exchanged salutes with Brad and Brian. The auditorium is full, Robert told him. Are the guards in place? They are, Brad said. Robert looked pleased. Okay, let's check all the doors. Make sure they're all locked. Ben rubbed his hands together nervously. It was time to go in. He walked toward the stage entrance and noticed that Christy was there waiting for him. Hi. She kissed him quickly on the cheek. I thought I'd wish you luck. Thanks. I'll need it, Ben said. Christy straightened his tie. Did anyone ever tell you you look great in suits? She asked. Matter of fact, Owen said that the other day. Ben sighed. If I have to start looking for a new job, I might be wearing them a lot. Don't worry, you'll do fine, Christy told him. Ben managed a slight smile. I wish I had your faith in me, he said. Christy laughed and turned him toward the stage door. Go get him, Tiger. The next thing Ben knew, he was standing near the side of the stage, looking out at the crowded auditorium filled with wave members. A moment later, Robert joined him there. Mr. Ross, he said, saluting. All the doors are secure and the guards are in place. Thank you, Robert, Ben said. It was time to begin. As he strode to the center of the auditorium stage, Ben glanced quickly toward the curtains behind him and then up at the projectionist booth at the back of the room. As he stopped and stood between two large television monitors that had been ordered from the AV department that day, the crowd burst spontaneously into the wave mottos, standing at their seats and giving the wave salute. Strength through discipline. Strength through community. Strength through action. Before them, Ben stood motionless. When they had finished their chants, he held up his arms for silence. In an instant, the huge roomful of students went silent. Such obedience, Ben thought sadly. He looked out over the large crowd, aware that this was probably the last time he would be able to hold their attention so firmly. Then he spoke. In a moment, our national leader will address us. And turning, he said, Robert. Mr. Ross, yes. Turn on the television sets. Robert turned on both sets, and the picture tubes grew bright and blue, with as yet no image. Throughout the auditorium, hundreds of eager wave members hunched forward in their seats, staring at the blank blue tubes and waiting. Outside, David and Lori tried a set of auditorium doors, but found them locked. They quickly tried a second set, but found those locked also. But there were more doors to try, and they ran around the side of the auditorium looking for them. The television screens were still blank. No face appeared on the screen, and no sounds came from the speakers. Around the auditorium, students began to squirm and murmur with anxiety. Why wasn't anything happening? Where was their leader? What were they supposed to do? As the tension in the room continued to build, the same question passed through their minds over and over. What were they supposed to do? From the side of the stage, Ben looked down at them, as the sea of faces stared back at him anxiously. Was it really true that the natural inclination of people was to look for a leader? Someone to make decisions for them? Indeed, the faces looking up at him said it was. That was the awesome responsibility any leader had, knowing that a group like this would follow. Ben began to realize how much more serious this little experiment was than he'd ever imagined. It was frightening how easily they would put their faith in your hands, how easily they would let you decide for them. If people were destined to be led, Ben thought, this was something he must make sure they learned. To question thoroughly. Never to put your faith in anyone's hands blindly. Otherwise. From the center of the audience, a single frustrated student suddenly jumped up from his seat and shouted at Mr. Ross, "There is no leader, is there?" Shocked students around the auditorium quickly turned as two wave guards rushed the offender out of the auditorium. In the confusion that followed, Lori and David were able to slip in through the door the guards had opened. Before the students had time to think about what had just happened, Ben strode to the center of the auditorium stage again. "Yes, you have a leader," he shouted. That was the cue Carl Block had been waiting for as he hid backstage. Now he pulled back the stage curtains to reveal a large movie screen. At the same moment, Alex Cooper, in the projection room, flicked on a projector. "There," Ben shouted at the auditorium full of students. "There is your leader." The auditorium was filled with gasps and exclamations of surprise as the gigantic image of Adolf Hitler appeared on the screen.
"That's it,"
Lori whispered excitedly to David.
"That's the movie he showed us that day."
"Now listen carefully," Ben shouted at them. "There is no National Wave Youth Movement. There is no leader. But if there was, he would have been it. Do you see what you've become? Do you see where you were headed? How far would you have gone? Take a look at your future." The film left Adolf Hitler and focused on the faces of the young Nazis who fought for him during World War II. Many of them were only teenagers, some even younger than the students in the audience. "You thought you were so special," Ross told them, "better than everyone outside of this room. You traded your freedom for what you said was equality. But you turned your equality into superiority over non-wave members. You accepted the group's will over your own convictions, no matter who you had to hurt to do it. Oh, some of you thought you were just going along for the ride, that you could walk away at any moment. But did you? Did any of you try it? Yes, you all would have made good Nazis," Ben told them. "You would have put on the uniforms, turned your heads, and allowed your friends and neighbors to be persecuted and destroyed. You say it could never happen again, but look how close you came. Threatening those who wouldn't join you, preventing non-wave members from sitting with you at football games. Fascism isn't something those other people did. It is right here, in all of us. You ask, how could the German people do nothing as millions of innocent human beings were murdered? How could they claim they weren't involved? What causes people to deny their own histories?" Ben moved closer to the front of the stage and spoke in a lower voice. "If history repeats itself, you will all want to deny what happened to you in the wave. But if our experiment has been successful, and I think you can see that it has, you will have learned that we are all responsible for our own actions, and that you must always question what you do rather than blindly follow a leader, and that for the rest of your lives you will never, ever allow a group's will to usurp your individual rights." Ben paused for a moment. So far he'd made it sound like they were all at fault. But it was more than that. "Now listen to me, please," he said. "I owe you an apology. I know this has been painful to you. But in a way it could be argued that none of you are as at fault as I am for leading you to this. I meant the wave to be a great lesson for you, and perhaps I succeeded too well. I certainly became more of a leader than I intended to be. And I hope you will believe me when I say that it has been a painful lesson for me, too. All I can add is, I hope this is a lesson we'll all share for the rest of our lives. If we're smart, we won't dare forget it. The effect on the students was staggering. All around the auditorium, they were slowly rising from their seats. A few were in tears. Others tried to avoid the eyes of those next to them. All looked stunned by the lesson they had learned. As they left, they discarded their posters and banners. The floor quickly became littered with yellow membership cards, and all thoughts of military posture were forgotten as they slunk out of the auditorium. Lori and David walked slowly down the aisle, passing the somber students filing out of the room. Amy was coming toward them, her head bowed. When she looked up and saw Lori, she burst into tears and ran to hug her friend. Behind her, David saw Eric and Brian. Both looked shaken. They stopped when they saw David, and for a few moments the three teammates stood in an awkward silence.
"What a freak out," Eric said,
his voice hardly more than a mumble. David tried to shrug it off. He felt bad for his friends.
"Well, it's over now," he told them. "Let's try and forget it. I mean, let's try not to forget it. But let's forget it at the same time."
Eric and Brian nodded. They understood what he meant, even if he hadn't exactly made sense. Brian made a rueful face.
"I should have known it," he said. "The first time that Clarkstown linebacker broke through and sacked me for a 15-yard loss last Saturday, I should have known it was no good."
The three teammates shared a short chuckle, and then Eric and Brian left the auditorium. David walked down toward the stage where Mr. Ross stood. His teacher looked very tired.
"I'm sorry I didn't trust you, Mr. Ross," David said.
"No, it was good that you didn't," Ross told him. "You showed good judgment. I should be apologizing to you, David. I should have told you what I was planning to do." Lori joined them.
"Mr. Ross, what's going to happen now?" she asked.
Ben shrugged and shook his head. "I'm not sure I know, Lori. We still have quite a bit of history to cover this semester. But maybe we'll take just one more period to discuss what happened today."
"I think we should," David said.
"You know, Mr. Ross," Lori said, "in a way, I'm glad this happened. I mean, I'm sorry it had to come to this, but I'm glad it worked out. And I think everyone learned a lot."
Ben nodded. "Well, that's nice of you, Lori. But I've already decided this is one lesson I'm going to skip in next year's course." David and Lori looked at each other and smiled. They said goodbye to Mr. Ross and turned to leave the auditorium. Ben watched Lori and David and the last of the former members of the Wave leave the auditorium. When they were gone and he thought he was alone, he sighed and said,
"Thank God."
He was relieved that it had ended well, and thankful that he still had his job at Gordon High. There would still be a few angry parents and incensed faculty members to smooth over, but in time he knew he could do it. He turned and was about to leave the stage when he heard a sob and saw Robert leaning against one of the television sets, tears running down his face. Poor Robert, Ben thought. The only one who really stood to lose in this whole thing. He walked toward the trembling student and put his arm around his shoulder.
"You know, Robert," he said, trying to cheer him up, "you look good in a tie and jacket. You ought to wear them more often."
Through his tears, Robert managed a smile.
"Thanks, Mr. Ross."
"What do you say we go out for a bite to eat?" Ben said, leading him off the stage. "There are some things I think we should talk about."
The End. This is Michael Crouch. We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Wave by Todd Strasser. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.